Our next public hearing is conditional use number 1807, Tidewater Environmental Services Incorporated.
This is an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for public utilities, both water and wastewater, to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Little Creek Hundred, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 13.228 acres, more or less.
Hold on for a second. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would please, if you're not going to stay for the next public hearing, please exit the room right away and you can have all the conversation you want out in the lobby. Thank you. All right, sir, go ahead.
I think I was at the acreage, more or less.
More or less.
Lying northwest of Road 462, also known as Trussell Pond Road, approximately 1.8 miles southeast of Road 461, also known as Old State Road. The commissioners have all been provided with a large exhibit booklet, spiral bound. It is a part of the record and has been a part of the record. We've also received three additional booklets of about the same size, which are on file. They are not provided directly to the commission due to their volume, and they are for reference of soils reconnaissance, a preliminary hydrogeological evaluation, and a preliminary groundwater impact assessment. They are also a part of the record. We have also received, which I will pass down to the commissioners, revised site plans. And we have a couple of agency comments. First one being from the Sussex Conservation District. Form of a memorandum provided by Debbie Asher, District Coordinator, and dated August 11th of 2008. It's reported that there are five different soil types on this application property. The applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation. Site does contain areas of hydric soils, and the applicant would be required to follow all federal and state wetland requirements. The site is located in a FEMA Zone A, according to the FEMA maps. There are no tax ditches affected. It may not be necessary for any off-site drainage improvements, and the applicant would be required to follow state sediment and stormwater requirements for any on-site drainage improvements. Attached to that memorandum is a copy of an aerial infrared and the aerial soil survey, appropriate map legend and map interpretation for the soils, and also a report on prime and other important farmland. I have two reports from the Utility Planning Division of the County Engineering Department, and first one being in reference to the water facility, the public utility, the site. Project is not capable of being annexed into a county-operated sanitary sewer district. The Sussex County Engineering Department has no objection to this application, and a concept plan is not required. Signed by John Ashman, Director of Utility Planning. Their second memo is in reference to wastewater facility. The site is located within the Western Sussex Planning Area. Conformity to the Western Sussex Planning Area will be required. In other comments, they provide that the proposed wastewater facility is located in the Western Sussex Planning Area, but is not in an area where the county expects to provide sewer service at this time. The county recommends that the wastewater system meet TMDL limits for the Nanticoke River watershed. The county requires design and construction of the collection and transmission system to meet Sussex County sewer standards and specifications. A review of the treatment and disposal system by the County Engineering Department is also required, and plan review fees may apply. Disposal fields should be clearly identified on recorded plots. The County Engineering Department agency in addition. Tidewater Environmental Services Incorporated has provided the engineering department with a copy of the proposed conditions, which are provided here as an attachment. With said conditions in place, the engineering department has no objection to this application, and that a concept plan will not be required. That's signed by John J. Ashman, Director of Utility Planning. Makes reference to a copy of five conditions proposed for approval. And that's all I have, gentlemen. Chef, question.
All right, sir. We thank you. Chair recognizes Mr. Schrader and his considerable posse. Those of you in the back, if you have an interest in this application, please feel free to move up. All the action's going to be right there on that board. It's an awful long ways away from where you are, but it's up totally up to you. But you'll be able to see it a lot better from up here. All right, sir, go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Wheatley. My name is Dennis Schrader, and I'm representing the Tidewater Environmental Services, Inc., and conditional use number 1807, which is a combined wastewater and water utility facility, which is shown on the aerial photo, which is visible to both the commission and to the public. I'd like to introduce the posse that I have brought with me, if you'll permit me. I have Bruce Patrick, who is vice president with Tidewater. I have Ring Lardner, Bruce Jones. I have Zach Crouch, and I have Frank Key, all of whom are identified in the book as having participated as a part of the design team that brings this project tonight. As Mr. Lank has pointed out, we have submitted to the commission for its use and review, and ultimately the use and review of the county council, an exhibit booklet that contains many different documents that one would expect to see for this particular type of application. In addition to the documentation that is provided in the various exhibits, there are excerpts of the hydrogeological evaluation, the soil investigation report, and the preliminary groundwater impact assessment contained in the exhibit book. But as Mr. Lank noted, we have provided complete copies of those reports to the commission. They are extremely large and voluminous and perhaps provide too much technical detail to be absorbed before this type of meeting. This application is on land that is sometimes identified in the various agency comments and some of the transmittals as the Duke's Truitt land, and I think perhaps the most important thing I can do tonight is clarify that there is no Duke's land involved in this. The Duke's land is not a part of this application. It is only the 13 plus or minus acres that are located on the lands of Carolyn and Robert J. Truitt. There are four tax map parcels that do make up this particular land, and I should point out to you that the 13.23 acres is not everything in the yellow. The conditional use application area is that which is highlighted in the brighter green, if you will. So there is a difference between the property boundary lines and the actual site that is being proposed for the conditional use. The property in question is AR1 agricultural residential with agricultural uses and woods in the area. There is a reference to wetlands, as I recall from the comments coming from soils. However, the wetlands are actually on the property, but not within the conditional use site. So there is some difference between, that's one of the reasons why it's important that you understand that there is a difference between the zoning line and the property line. This conditional use application is being pursued under the county code Section 115-22, which provides for public utilities, both water and wastewater, in the building's treatment plant disposal sites for regional uses and applications. This property is also designated as a level 4 in the state planning, state strategies for spending maps, but we don't believe that that is relevant to this particular project. Mainly for the reason that what we are proposing to do here is consistent with the need to provide wastewater and water to whatever developments may be approved or have been approved in this area. And that decision as to who or what projects will be developed will not be made by us, but it will be made by you all and by the county council. There are no state funds that are being expended on behalf of this project. None are being requested. There will be no increased traffic resulting in road expenditures to the state. We're going to have no school impacts because of the placement of the water and wastewater facilities. So as I often say in these particular applications, I don't believe the level four designation is particularly applicable here. Lastly, there is but one public street involved, and that would be Trossam Pond Road. There will be sanitary waste disposal available on site for the uses that we propose, because we will be, in fact, providing sanitary waste disposal. And lastly, as far as water goes, we will be providing ourselves, or the applicant will be providing to itself, its own water. With those thoughts in mind, and in the interest of moving this along a little bit, I'm going to call Mr. Patrick to the podium. Mr. Patrick, as you know, is a registered engineer and is vice president with Tidewater Utilities, Inc., and with Tidewater Environmental Services. And he will describe for you the various technical things that go into both the water and the wastewater treatment plant. My guess is that if you have questions, they are more likely to result in questions concerning the wastewater treatment plant. And he will describe for you how the EDUs, the gallons per day, the water distribution will all take place. And at the conclusion of these, I will have a few summary comments, and then I will make myself and the Mr. Patrick and the experts who are with me available to answer any questions that you may have. Mr. Patrick?
Thank you. Thank you, Dennis. Good evening, commissioners. I'm Bruce Patrick, Vice President of Engineering with Tidewater Environmental Services and Tidewater Utilities, Inc. And first, I'd like to say I appreciate the opportunity to be able to present our proposal to you this evening. Just a brief background on me. I'm a registered professional engineer with 17 years experience in the design, permitting of water and wastewater facilities, the construction administration of those facilities, and the utility management of those facilities. Brief background on the companies. Tidewater Utilities, Inc. is a registered, regulated water utility that operates under the realm of the Public Service Commission, DENREC, and the Office of Drinking Water. And Tidewater Environmental Services is a regulated wastewater utility that operates under the realm of the Public Service Commission and DENREC. Essentially, the companies design, build, own, operate water and wastewater facilities as a utility provider. The Public Service Commission oversees us essentially for three areas: for tariff, for the fees that we charge, for franchise, the areas that we're permitted to operate in, and for the service that we provide. DENREC oversees us for a few things. They oversee us for the construction of the wastewater facilities, for the operation of the wastewater facilities, and also they issue the well permits and issue allocation permits for water facilities. The Office of Drinking Water will oversee the project for the construction operation of the water systems themselves. And the county certainly will be reviewing the plans for the wastewater facility. With that, I'll give a brief overview of the proposal itself, starting with the purpose of our proposal. Essentially, to design, build, own, operate a water and wastewater facility, it's actually going to do several things. It's going to allow us to serve existing developments within our what we'll refer to as our planning area. And just if we refer to Exhibit C in the booklet, the planning area is highlighted in blue. That doesn't necessarily mean we'll serve everything in blue. That's just sort of our focus area that we feel is technically feasible. To be able to serve in that area, we have to be awarded a franchise to it. So it's not our entire area. That's just sort of the focus area. A couple of the developments that have inquired about the service are Briarwood and Sandy Ridge, which are just to the eastern, to the western edge of the planning area. They're highlighted in purple. By serving these developments, we'll actually eliminate an existing community septic system in Sandy Ridge and several individual septic systems in Briarwood Manor itself. In addition, in the blue planning area, if you look closely, there's dots scattered throughout it. There are 1,233 existing septic systems in the area, so it would allow us the opportunity to provide service to those if they are interested. And I say if interested because they have to want the service to award the franchise to us. One other thing I'd like to point out in the area, Trap Pond State Park is in the area, and it currently with the campground is on septic systems. And we have a letter of interest from the state park that perhaps someday they would be interested in tying into this to eliminate the septics within the park. So with that, I'll start to go over the types of treatment and disposal, but if I could just give the general location of it, the location of the facilities themselves, perfect. They're highlighted in yellow. That's the 13.22 acres that we're talking about. To the north, they're on the north side of Trussum Pond Road. Of course, this is Route 24. This is Gordy Road. And then Route 13, certainly straight up and down the corridor. And as I mentioned, Briarwood and Sandy Ridge are just on the eastern or western portion of the planning area. The properties for the facilities themselves are on the north side of Trussum Pond Road. They're about 2 miles east of the intersection of Trussum Pond Road and Route 13. So with that, I'll start to go through some of the specific types of treatment and disposal for the wastewater facility. The facility proposed is a very high-end treatment facility. It's a biological process known as an SBR, a sequencing batch reactor. We realize this is an Anacoke watershed, which is subject to TMDL regulation. The analysis for the TMDL was completed in 2000, but the PCS, the pollution control strategy, has not been implemented. So we looked at the Inland Bays watershed and the PCS that was implemented. It actually has a lot more stringent analysis that was done when you compare the TMDLs of the Nanticoke and the Inland Bays. And what we're proposing will actually meet the more stringent. So we're proposing to meet and far exceed what would be proposed in the Nanticoke watershed TMDL.
Excuse me, for the benefit of those who might not know, would you explain the term TMDL and what that means to the average person in the street?
Sure, yes, sir, I'd be glad to. It's total maximum daily load. DENREC actually has a responsibility. The state, as we know, is broken up into different watersheds, and DENREC actually is doing analysis on all the watersheds as to the nutrients that are in each of the watersheds and how it impacts or impairs the various watersheds. With that, after the analysis is completed from watershed to watershed, they promulgate regulations that they refer to as pollution control strategies with how the nutrients should be reduced within that watershed, and it dictates standards, so to speak, for non-point sources, for wastewater treatment facilities, and so forth. In the particular watershed we're referring to, there's a requirement that nitrogen be reduced, and I would actually have to refer to my expert, but I want to say it's in the neighborhood of 50% in this particular watershed, which we're going to meet and exceed that requirement. The treatment facility itself will actually provide nutrient removal. To give you a feel, the total nitrogen being discharged will be 10 milligrams per liter. And as a background, actually, the drinking water standard for nitrogen consists of nitrate that cannot exceed 10. So this actually, the total nitrogen is going to be 10. So it's actually below the drinking water standard. In addition, the BOD and the TSS, the total suspended solids that would be discharged, are 10 milligrams per liter. And just for a comparable analysis, a lot of the surface water facilities that discharge in the state today do not meet these standards. So these standards are superior to a lot of the surface water discharge parameters. The plant will have a mechanical influence screen, dual SBR trains, so to speak, which are essentially treatment units in parallel. There will be post-flow equalization, and it will all be followed up by UV disinfection. So the discharge is going to be a very high-quality discharge that will actually go into rapid infiltration basins, and we'll talk about the disposal in a few minutes. The location of the facility, I'd like to refer back to Exhibit A. It's on the north side of Trussum Pond Road, and it's in this area. As you can see, it's surrounded for the most part by woods on the north, the west, and somewhat on the eastern side by woods. It has some poultry houses, actually, on the southeast corner in this general area. Okay. What I'd like to that's the general location. If I could refer to Exhibit B, View 4, there's an actual rendering of what the treatment facility building would look like. It's proposed to be housed in an agricultural-style building, something that will aesthetically blend in with the surrounding areas. And my eyes are not as good as they used to be. I'm looking for view 4. Yeah, there's view 4. Actually, the treatment building itself is the red building. It's back here. It's proposed to be an agriculturally styled building. Okay, so it would blend in with the surrounding area. Next, I'd like to talk about the type of disposal that we're proposing on the property. It's known as rapid infiltration basin disposal, referred to as RIBS. And essentially, they're shallow basins, typically about 18 inches deep, that would accept the treated water. There are two areas, a primary area that consists of 2.07 acres that will have five basins. And those basins are the five basins in this particular area. And then there's another 2.07 acre area that has five spare basins, which are just to the north of the original basins. Essentially, you dose one basin on a per every 2 days. So you use a basin on a two-day basis, and then you rotate to the next basin and into the third basin and so on, allowing an eight-day dry time between dosing of the basin. The basins themselves will actually be dry for the most part. They typically dry within an hour or two of dosing. It kind of looks like a sand trap, so to speak, that you may see on a golf course. The reason they're dry, and we'll talk about it when we get into the hydrogeological requirements, you have to have a pretty significant depth to the groundwater, as well as good permeable soils. So the location of this disposal is actually, as I pointed to, is on the same site behind the treatment buildings, and it, again, on the west side, the north side, and the east side is surrounded by woods, and the basins themselves will actually be fenced. And we're proposing a fence that's aesthetically pleasing. Again, it would probably be like a white PVC fence that perhaps would be used for a horse pasture. I'd like to talk about the extensive hydrogeological work and the soils work that's been completed on the site, starting with the soils work. We've completed a feasibility study and a detailed soils investigation report. The feasibility study consisted of 20 test pits, 28 soils borings, and 8 double ring infiltrometer tests, which measured the permeability of the soils. This was done on a 150-foot grid basis, which is required as an initial step to determine that the site is suitable to take the next step. And it was determined that this site is suitable for the proposed use that we're suggesting. After you meet that criteria, you go to what they call the DSIR, the Detailed Site Investigation Report, which really hones in on the disposal area itself. You do sampling on 75-foot grids. When this was done, we performed 77 soil borings, 40 test pits, and 15 double ring infiltrometer tests. And the data has turned out to be very favorable. To give you a summary of the data, the depth to groundwater in the rib area is approximately 8 to 10 foot deep. The DENREC regulations require a 2-foot separation from the bottom of the rib to the groundwater table. So as we go into the hydrogeological model, you'll see we far exceed that. There's quite a safety factor involved with this site. And the double ring infiltrometer test have yielded permeability rates as low as 7 minutes per inch. So it's a good permeable site, good depth of groundwater. So it's really good for this intended use. The hydrogeological work that's been done so far consisted of a preliminary groundwater impact assessment. We essentially conducted wet season monitoring through DENREC's wet season, which was from December through May. We had 8 observation wells across the disposal area where we measured the depth to groundwater to determine the groundwater height during the wettest times of the year. There have been several deeper borings. We performed 7 40-foot deep borings as well as a 123-foot deep boring and an 80-foot deep test well. The purpose was to look at all the different layers so we could determine the various characteristics of the soils as well as the transmissivity of the soils, which allowed you to see how quickly things move through the soils. The 80-foot deep test well, we also performed a 72-hour pump test on it, which allowed us to determine that transmissivity. Taking all the data from the hydrogeological work that was done along with the soils work that was done, we combined that and put it into essentially a 3D model, a model called ModFlow, which is where we actually simulated the loadings to the basins. And at a loading rate of 400,000 gallons per day, which equates to 1,333 EDUs when you use 300 gallons per day per EDU, which is the standard practice for Sussex County, the model determined essentially that from the bottom of the basin to the groundwater table, when you discharge, there's a little groundwater mound. There's over a 6-foot separation from that. So based on the DENREC requirements that require a 2-foot separation, this site actually yields a safety factor of 3. So it's been determined to be a really good site for the proposed use. The levels of treatment combined with that good separation, there's actually going to be additional treatment that would take place in that separation zone. Based on that, it's been determined that there's no adverse impacts on the wells or the water bodies in the area. DENREC actually issued a letter dated November 5th based on this work, essentially saying that the site appears suitable for RIBS. So based on the work that's been done to date, we're proposing to provide high levels of treatment, nitrogen, that it would exceed the drinking water standard. It will exceed the TMDL standards that will be required. The discharge, again, I just like to reiterate, is actually substantially better than a lot of the discharges that are discharged to surface water bodies throughout the state. I'd like to talk a little bit about the phase construction of the facility. We will certainly not construct the 400,000 gallon per day facility all at one time. It would be constructed in multiple phases. We anticipate probably three phases, probably 100,000 gallons per day for phase one, 100,000 gallons per day for the second phase, and then the third phase would be 200,000 gallons per day. And essentially, the incremental increases are such that you can put one phase into operation relatively easily, which would allow you to minimize any pumping and hauling that may be required, such that you can start up the facility. With that, I'd like to talk a little bit about the water system. We're proposing to install up to two supply wells to the west of the treatment facility.
Before you move on to the water, let me ask you a question that certainly would be on my mind if this was anywhere close to me. What about a smell? You've always told us what it was going to look like, what we were going to see. I want to hear it. No, I want you to take a minute and talk about odors and noises.
That's a great question. There are essentially none that you would hear as a neighbor. We have several existing facilities in operation. One that I reference quite frequently, in fact, I took some folks on a tour today and they just couldn't believe it. Within the Hart's Landing development on the north side of Route 24, 3 or 4 miles west of Route 1, we have a facility. The facility is literally 60 to 80 feet from the community swimming pool. We've never received any complaints. Today we went in there. It was an unexpected tour. We just sort of popped in. The folks that were with us just remarked, there was no smell at all. With the technology that we're using, and it's just amazing. We've never had any issues with that, and we have several other facilities also that are quite closely knit within communities, much closer than this particular one. This one is somewhat, away from homes. So, great question, but there should not be any.
Have you had any discussions with the folks who live in this area right now? Do you have any contact with them at this point?
I have not had any direct discussions. I know the folks that own the property, actually, I believe, are the closest ones. They live in the general area.
Okay.
But I personally have not.
If some of these folks wanted to tour a similar facility, would you make that available to them?
Absolutely. We'd be glad to take them to several. We can take them to three or four.
Okay.
On the water facility, we're proposing to install up to two supply wells on the same site to the west of the treatment facility, be in this general area. There's adequate, we've determined that there's an adequate amount of land that would allow us to accommodate this type of well field. Based on what we encountered with the research where we did the observation wells for the PGIA, as well as the data that we've looked at from surrounding wells. There's a lot of irrigation wells that we've looked at. Tidewater actually has wells in the Sandy Ridge development, which was on Exhibit A. And we looked at that and did a lot of research and determined to give an example. The wells in Sandy Ridge are screened. There's two of them from 310 to 360. And the specific capacity is 1.83 gallons per minute per foot. So it's a relatively high producing well of approximately 500 gallons per minute, and the strata of the aquifers continue across in this same direction, so we could expect that same type of yield on this particular site as well. The upper aquifer, typically screened from 90 feet to 130 feet, the well has a specific capacity of 5 gallons per minute per foot, which yields about 400 gallons per minute. It's a little less yield because the well is a little more shallower, but for the most part, this area is relatively untapped for the amount of water that's there, so there's a great supply there. So the data that we have combined with the existing wells in the area essentially indicate and illustrate to us that This is a good site for the intended purpose. The water storage facility, I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Essentially, you need water storage for your peak hour demand and for your fire protection needs. Based on the size of what we refer to in Exhibit C, our service territory, looking at that and what's required with the fire protection requirements and what's required to meet peak hour demand, we're proposing to install a tank of up to 400,000 gallons per day. It would be an elevated tank, hydrofear style. What I'd like to refer to actually is Exhibit B. We have several views. As you can see, this is a rendering that's on the site. We would propose the tank to be a sky neutral color. There's four or five different views. Why elevated? An elevated tank actually improves your overall reliability of your system. Essentially, it operates by gravity. It helps provide consistent pressure and helps meet fire flows and your peak hour demand. Even when there's a power outage, I mean, the tank is typically, we try to keep it relatively full, so if there is a power outage, it would still function and supply the area. The Office of Drinking Water actually supports this type of storage. We received a letter, the county received a memo dated June 8th, 2000, essentially for the same reasons that I just stated, supporting these types of storage facilities. We've talked about the location on the site. If we refer to the planning area, you can see our site is centrally located, so this again is actually good for water distribution and pressure purposes as well, to have your tank centrally located to cover the area. With that, I just kind of like to summarize everything. We're proposing to design, build, own, operate a state-of-the-art water and wastewater facility that would have supply and storage. It would reduce the nutrients and meet all TMDL requirements. We would be recharging the groundwater on site, recharging the aquifers with the type of disposal that we're referring to. There would be no adverse effects on the wells or the water bodies, and of course that's of concern to us. I mean, our wells are going to be there, so we want to ensure that. And it would be to serve existing developments, as I mentioned. It would eliminate the community system at Sandy Ridge, and it provides the opportunity to eliminate the other septics in the area, of which there's 1,233, if folks wish to be connected to it. I mean, naturally, they cannot be made connect to it. With that, that concludes my overview.
One thing I want to ask you again, because if I were living next door or down the street in terms of the water, my first concern is going to be, especially if I have a perfectly fine well on my property, is this going to have any effect on it? And if not, why not?
That's another great question, actually. The way the wells are sited, we certainly do a reconnaissance of the area, make sure we have proper isolation distances from surrounding wells. We actually have to get what's called an allocation permit from DENREC, and DENREC will not over-allocate any particular aquifer. The way these wells are positioned and situated, I mean, you have essentially a cone of influence when you pump out of any particular well, and the cone of influence essentially is much smaller, it's a much smaller distance than are the wells around in the surrounding area. So there's a lot of research that goes into that, but there's the existing wells will not be affected by what's proposed here.
Okay. And just want to make sure that I heard you correctly, that once again, thinking of the neighbors, no one is going to be required to hook up, pay for, or have anything to do with this system if they don't want to.
That is correct, sir. We actually have to have the franchise area to serve them. And to get the franchise area, they have to agree to it. They would have to sign a petition agreeing to it. So it's totally up to them.
Now, let's say that on the other hand, that if my septic system fails and I'm about a half a mile or a mile from your place, are you going to be willing to run service out there for me if I'm in your franchise area?
What we would do, we would actually, something similar to what the county would do, we would do a feasibility study. We'll send you to see, is it just you? Are there others in the area interested? And after the feasibility study was done, certainly we'd have to crunch numbers to see the economics of it, and we would like to, and we would certainly make every attempt to do that. If it's just one individual and it's relatively isolated, it may be a little difficult to do that.
But generally, you'd be willing to do it?
We would certainly be willing to do anything we possibly could to make it work.
Okay, good.
And the Department of Natural Resources may require that a person hook up to
the DENREC regulations. If they're a half mile away, the DENREC regs would not require it. But Lawrence has hit a good point, both on water and wastewater. There's a specified distance on the water side, I think, if you're within 200 feet. So it's a relatively close distance of a water main. They would probably not issue a replacement well or a replacement septic system for you.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
That last exchange took up a lot of what I had hoped to say as a part of my summary, but I will say it one last time just for the benefit of the people who are present. There are no municipal water or wastewater treatment facilities in the area. This is in a county planning area, but that does not mean that they are doing anything actively there. In fact, their plan is to do nothing for the moment, and for that reason, we have the letter of no objection from the county. For these reasons, if the wastewater treatment plant and the water facility are granted by the county, then the applicant, will be in a position to serve Sandy Ridge, Briarwood, and any of the people that are shown in our Exhibit C and D. And I would ask you just briefly to refer to those for a moment. As you will note from both Exhibits C and D, there are areas that either have petitioned already. C is a wastewater project map. These are areas that have either been granted certificates or have petitioned to come into the proposed wastewater treatment plant. And Exhibit D is the same statement, but with reference to the water project, and these are shown in blue. Sandy Ridge and Briarwood are shown in purple and are adjacent to the growth areas for the town of Laurel. In the perfect world, if it ever should come to pass that Laurel would need sites, then we also may be available to help them with either their wastewater or water requirements should there be any need for such a thing. I want to go back to aesthetics for just a moment because we don't have a board that demonstrates it, but if you take a look at the last page in Exhibit B, Bruce made some references to some very small pictures of what the ag-like building would look like. And
would you pass that? You guys have a picture of that for the folks here. Zach, if you would pass that around so they can see it.
I'd also point out, Mr. Wheatley, we're there. My client and its engineers are not shy. We're in the business of selling wastewater and water. This has horses and cows in it, and I don't believe that they are going to come with this site automatically, but they may come with it later on.
Trying to say that's a similar building.
It's a similar building, but not exactly, because
I believe this is actually a picture of where Mr. Patrick lives, but I'm not sure. We'll have to ask him. Maybe one of you will ask him. But it is intended to be a graphic representation of the agricultural use or agricultural architecture that would be used to conceal the wastewater treatment in a water facility from a public view. Gentlemen, I have submitted to you proposed findings of fact and conditions, and as is noted in Mr. Ashman's letter, I also submitted to the County Engineering Department several weeks ago the five conditions of approval that I have asked that you consider if you are favorably disposed to approve this application. They will look familiar to you because they are, in fact, the same conditions that were preliminarily approved as a part of the Wandendale application, with the exception that I have added a paragraph 4, which relates to the water utility, which was not a part of the Wandendale application. The reason for doing so is to make sure that the County Engineering Department was content that what was being proposed and as approved or recommended for approval by this body or by the council, that there were conditions that would be satisfactory to them. As we all know, these conditional uses are subject to the opportunity for you all to impose conditions. I would ask for you to carefully think about what you do, because sometimes the conditions that are imposed are contrary to the requirements of DNREC or the Department of Health, creating a little bit of turmoil for us on this side of the bench. And if you do impose conditions that are different, make sure that they are subject to, if you impose different conditions, that you acknowledge that there may be a preemptive regulation at the state level that we have to comply with that is different from what you all may propose. With these thoughts in mind, generally speaking, this is a public or semi-public use that is intended for approval by a conditional use because it requires zoning judgment. We think we have submitted to you in the exhibits that we have given you tonight, along with the three texts of the various studies that were submitted separately, and the comments of Mr. Patrick, a good reason to approve these projects. I'm available to answer questions if you have any, as is Mr. Patrick and the other experts that are traveling with me this evening.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if anyone has any questions for you, and I believe, Mr. Gordy, this falls in your vast area of influence.
Mr. Patrick, can you address the smell association, or no smell at all. Can you address the noise associated with it?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Actually, that was asked, and I guess I did not directly address
that. Well, you kind of blew by it. You said there wasn't any, and then you went on to
the
smell.
Right, right. But it's the same, essentially the same thing. Again, today, when I took the folks down to Harts Landing, the building would have essentially the same types of equipment, blowers, pumps, in it as this one would. And you cannot hear it. They're all housed inside a building, inside a sound attenuating enclosures. So you should not hear any adverse impacts from noise either.
How about generators?
The generators are typically enclosed in sound attenuating enclosures as well.
So the generator is enclosed?
Yes, it's in a sound attenuating enclosure. Sometimes we've done it a couple of different ways where the one that I spoke of today, because it is so close, we put it right in the building. Other times the generator may sit beside the building, behind the building, but in a little sound attenuating enclosure.
Is there chemicals stored on site?
This particular one, there could be. For phosphorus removal, there might be a type of polymer that would help settle it out. The disinfection is ultraviolet, this light disinfection, so none there. We may early on feed the system, so to speak, if the flow is a little low with some sort of carbon source. On the water side, I mean, we use hypochlorite, essentially chlorine that you chlorinate your water with, which is very standard and typical.
And they would be stored indoors, not outdoors?
Oh, yeah, they would be stored indoors, and there's double-walled containment requirements for those types of storage containers.
In the distance from the wastewater treatment building to Trustman's Pond Road, do you have any idea how much the distance?
I do. I knew it at one point. We can pull the site plan out, and we can give that to you. It's several hundred feet, I think it's.
800 feet?
Yeah,
that's quite a bit. Yeah.
About 800 feet.
Okay. 1 inch is 100, that's been shrunk down. The drawing has been shrunk, so I don't think that scale is applicable. But I'm looking at the dimensions.
We're going to have an answer for you, Bruce. Hang okay. Okay. 580 feet from the edge of the right of way,
and none of the ribs would be in a wetlands or anything.
No, sir. None of the project itself is encroaching on any wetlands.
Okay. There's a couple of properties that are adjacent to the site. Would you be willing to put landscaping up there to a buffer if that's desired by the homeowner?
Yeah, we certainly want to be a good neighbor, and I mean, we have thoughts. I mean, we haven't finalized anything, but thoughts in our mind. You know, perhaps it's Leland Cypress or some sort of fencing. But yes, we definitely want to be a good neighbor.
Be willing to do that. Yes. Okay. And if you could go over the how this wastewater and water will be regulated. Who regulates it, okay, and how they regulate it?
Okay, great question. There are several entities that regulate it. The Public Service Commission actually oversees Tidewater, Environmental Services, and Utilities, Inc. for the tariff, essentially for the fees that we would charge the folks, the customers. They oversee us and regulate us for our franchise area. They have to approve the area that we can operate in. If somebody requests that we provide service to them, they essentially sign a petition. We take it to the Public Service Commission to get their approval. And they regulate us for the service that we provide. They essentially stay on top of us, making sure we're responsive, that we're doing the right thing. DENREC actually oversees us for several things. On the wastewater side, They approve the construction permits. They require all the soils testing, the hydrogeological work that was done, as well as detailed design drawings. Once they're satisfied with the construction, approve that permit and it's constructed, they forever regulate us on the operating side. They issue permits to us that have monitoring requirements, both for the discharge as well as to monitor the groundwater. There would be monitor wells in the ground that we'd have to monitor groundwater as well. DENREC also issues the well permits and allocation permits that I had referred to previously to essentially safeguard the aquifer to make sure that we're not overpumping any particular aquifer. The Office of Drinking Water, on the water side, they issue the construction permits for what I would refer to as a pump house, where the water would come in and be chlorinated as it goes out. So they issue construction permits for that, for water mains, for the storage tanks and so forth. And the county would actually regulate us from the perspective of the engineering department. They would review the plans and make sure they're in accordance with the county standards.
Okay. And also, as far as employees, do you have one there constantly, or they just make certain visits? Or
yeah, this particular facility is pretty similar to several others that we have in the area. It is visited on a daily basis. It's not an eight-hour day, though. They're there usually a couple hours a day, checking the pumps, the blowers, the essentially the bells, whistles, making sure everything's functioning properly. But it is actually automated, and it can be monitored and controlled 24 hours a day. There's a very sophisticated, essentially, alarm system, if you will, that if a pump happens to go down, or if a blower goes down, or if you lose power, there's certain alarm codes, and that alarm would trigger, and it would call the operator on call, and we're on call 24/7, 365 days a year. So they will not be manned there physically, you know, 8 hours a day, a couple hours a day, but they'll certainly be on call the whole time.
That's all the questions I have, Mr. Wheatley.
All right, sir. We thank you. Mr. Burton.
Just to follow up on that manning of the station, being that it sits so far back, would you see a need for a gate up at the front?
That's something we would certainly look at. Most of our facilities are not necessarily gated. The buildings themselves certainly would be secured, so no one could get in there. But I mean, you're bringing up a good point. I think we should certainly look at that. That may be something that we would want to do, being it sits back so far off of the road. So.
Thank you. I'm just a little confused on the whole parcel is one site, and then the conditional use is in the inner circle of that?
That is correct. The conditional use site is smaller than the combination of all the tax map parcels.
And then any expansion would have to stay in that circle?
Either stay inside the conditional use site, or would result in an additional conditional use to come back to enlarge the site for any potential other uses that would be made.
So the spares, I hate to say the word spare rib, but the spares that are out that's for the expansion. That would be. It is not going to be built today.
Spare ribs, as we both know, shouldn't be said out loud at public hearings. But those ribs would have to be available as a part of the DENREC regulatory scheme. They're not expansion for future.
They are not.
They will not be built today. They're in the event. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
They're spares in the event that something unexpected should happen in one of the basins. We could go install another basin just sort of as a backup to the one basin.
Same thing required for a septic system.
The same thing that's required for a septic. DENREC makes us have a footprint set aside 100% of the same area that we initially install. So they would not be installed up front with the original five basins, and they may never need to be installed.
They're for redundancy, not for expansion.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So what the facility can, in its phasing process, if everything worked correctly, would only need five?
That is true, sir, yes.
Is there any plan for the rest of the land?
We do not have any plans for the remainder of that 13.22 acres.
The representative of the owners that I've spoken to would intend to continue to have the residents along Trussum Pond Road, but they've indicated that if it becomes necessary, they would remove them, their family members.
Okay. But selling the property?
Yes. Actually, it's a lease.
Lease. Can, Can you review the phasing of the construction?
What we would propose on the wastewater treatment facility itself is actually to install it in phases, essentially. We're thinking there would be four phases where it would be 100,000 gallons per day initially, then we would add 100,000 gallons per day, and then 200,000 gallons per day. And the key, I mean, usage, when something is new like that and folks are connecting, the usage would be relatively low early on, and you have to have a certain flow to keep it in operation. So you want to have some relatively smaller phases early on. That way you can keep it in operation. You can minimize your pumping and hauling and your expenses and kind of get that placed in operation earlier than if you just built it all in one phase as far as the treatment facility itself.
What about the water?
The water facility? The two wells actually would be constructed at the same time. The reason being, actually, the Office of Drinking Water operate under, essentially they call it 10 state standards, and you have to have one well for primary purpose and one well for backup and redundancy. So they would both be installed at the same time to meet that requirement. And the actual water facility itself is going to be relatively small. It would be difficult to phase that, essentially, due to the size of it.
But the tower would go up.
Yeah, the tower would probably wouldn't go up right on day one, but it would have to go up. It probably would have to go up on day one when you connect to an existing larger development. It's all fire code driven. So when you're serving more than 50 homes, essentially, it would have to be there.
And that blue area is the blue is the intent that you would like to service out of this?
That's what I refer to as our planning area, our focus area.
And this plant would pick up that? It has the ability to do that?
The existing area would not have the ability to serve all of that. The existing facility could serve about 1,300 EDUs, 400,000 gallons per day. The area that's been identified is just kind of technically what we would be able to serve kind of distance-wise, somewhat economically, if folks were to request service. If everybody in the area were to request service, all the existing ones, the 1,233, that could be pretty close to handling them if they wanted it. But to expand beyond that, we would need an additional footprint, which we would have to come back for another conditional use for that purpose.
And the pink areas are areas that you've...
Those are areas that have been franchised to us, or there's been petitions signed that would be franchised to us.
That's all I got.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Lang?
No, my questions have been answered. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Couth?
Well, my questions have been answered.
Thank you.
Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Council?
No questions.
All right, then. Gentlemen, we thank you. If you'll kindly take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anybody here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 1807, Tidewater Environmental Services Incorporated? Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Michael Cotton. I'm a registered professional engineer with ECI, that's Engineering Consultants International. I represent the owners of Briarwood Mobile Home Park as well as Sandy Ridge Community, and both of those owners are interested in positively moving forward with this project.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you. Anyone else like to speak in favor? For anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 1807. Yes, sir. We'll start over here with number 24.
Good evening. I'm Michael Lowe. I live directly across from the proposed plan. I've been jotting down a few questions.
Okay.
And I don't want to take all your time, but...
I don't have to be anywhere until tomorrow at... 10:15, I have to be in Hagerstown.
I'll try to get out before then. In one of his one of the gentleman's statements, they said they had 8 observation wells. I used to work for a well drilling company, and I was just wondering how those wells were abandoned and if they were abandoned in a way that they would not contaminate any existing wells.
All right, I'll find out.
They also say that it shouldn't drain our wells that we live close by with.
Mm-hmm.
I personally have property that is less than 20 to 25 feet from the property line they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically saying that we don't have to hook up to them. But on the other hand, if my septic, I actually own two septic systems on my property for two dwellings and two wells. And if any of those happen to go bad, if I understood the gentleman earlier, I'm not going to be allowed to get a new permit to put my own well or septic in.
Well, that would be up to Denrec, actually. The applicant can't make you hook up. The county is not going to make you hook up, but Denrec might.
Exactly. So they're taking a right away from me in a roundabout way is the point that I was making at that. It might be cheaper for me to go with a new septic system than in the long run with this. I mean, I don't have figures in front of me, but that's the point I was getting to with that.
Okay.
They also stated that Denrec or someone usually checks their wells as far as the nitrates and whatever. As far as the basins, I'm not real familiar with this, but I understand that water's going to go down in the ground. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody going to be checking the local residents' wells as far as levels going up in the ground and, you know, nitrates or whatever? That was another concern I had.
Okay, I'll ask him. I think the statement was made that stuff's removed before the water's discharged.
Okay.
But I'll ask him. I'll certainly find out.
One of the other things I was wondering, is there going to be any solid waste put on the ground or spread on the fields or to that nature? I understand the liquid part.
Yeah, the answer is no, there won't be. But I'll ask them, but I pretty much know it to be true that there won't be, but I will ask.
Okay. I don't understand. Do they remove that?
We'll find out. We'll let them explain it. I'll get them explain it
Thank
to
you.
Us.
They also stated that this will serve projects that are right now being considered or that are already in use, such as the trailer parks they mentioned. Will this make it easier for a project to get passed that was possibly turned down before because of this? I mean, there were other issues, and I won't go down that road, with another project that was previously tied together with this. And I just didn't know if this would in turn make it easier for that to take in place. But I know you probably can't answer that right now.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard one. That's speculation. Kind of hard to speculate.
I had another question here. Okay, when they also said when the power goes out, they have generators, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
I personally know a little bit about this land. My father used to own it years ago before Mr. Truitt bought it.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a creek that runs in the back part, not far from where they're planning on putting this.
Mm-hmm.
If for some reason something goes out, something goes haywire, a machine goes wrong, and there is some sort of overflow,
mm-hmm.
this creek travels into Trussum Pond, and I think somewhere down the road might tie into Trap Pond, I'm not sure. But I know that there's wetlands to the east that I've been told has been considered wetlands fairly close to the east of this project. I know he said it's not any wetlands on this project.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a concern of mine also, if there was going to be any runoff.
What their answer was in reference to wetlands was that there's none within the conditional use boundaries that they propose to utilize. That's because that's not the whole property. It's sort of centralized on that property.
So they're saying it's not on that property, is what you're saying?
Within the confines of the application site, there are no wetlands.
Right, okay.
Because they're only using a part of that farm.
Okay. Well, I'm sure I'll think of some later on, but...
Well, if you do, after you sit down, you got to tell your neighbor.
I understand.
Because it's one trip to a customer.
I want to thank you for your time.
And you also have the opportunity to raise that question at county council.
That's right. You get to do this again.
When will that be, did you say?
9th.
That'll be the 9th of September, I believe.
September.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right. If you would, see if we can answer this gentleman's questions. I saw you were jotting some notes down. Do you have them, or do you need me to go?
I tried to jot them down. I think I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 of them. The 8 observation wells, anytime we abandon a well, we actually have a licensed well driller that would do it, and they are abandoned in accordance with the DENREC requirements. On this particular site, and perhaps Bruce Jones may know, I think the wells may still be there, at least a portion of the wells, because we've done an awful lot of testing, but as we go through the final permitting, there will be a monitoring plan that will be implemented, which will actually address one of his other questions. We'll actually have to have monitor wells in place around the basin areas so that not only will we monitor the discharge into the basin, but we'll be monitoring the groundwater so that if the groundwater is flowing off site, the quality of it will be intercepted in this monitor well, so we'll know what's being discharged and into that monitor well before it gets off site or to anyone else's surrounding well. And I believe we've left some of the wells actually in place until we've fully determined which ones would be used as monitor wells. But when they are abandoned, they will certainly be abandoned in accordance with the DENREC requirements by a licensed well driller.
Okay.
That's a couple of them. The one was a comment. He had mentioned that his property is about 25 feet away, and I do not know fully. It sounded like his property line was 25 foot away from our property line, I think.
That's what he was saying.
So in general, I mean, the well is still going to be probably several hundred feet away, I would anticipate. At least, it's definitely going to be at least 150 feet away because of the isolation distance required on our property for the well. So with that, it's rare that the cone of influence would be any greater than that. So, I mean, we've never, and in kind of just a little bit about our past record, we have 180 wells throughout the state, and we've been pretty fortunate. We've never had any that's affected anyone else's wells. Dennis had mentioned the aquifer. Would we be in the same aquifer? We're looking at two different aquifers at this point. I do not know which aquifer perhaps he's in, but the upper aquifer is very plentiful. I mean, we've looked at some DGS reports. I mean, the amount of water being used out of that aquifer is extremely low, a few percent as compared to what it can actually supply. So I feel very comfortable, I guess, that we will not affect the well. However, and we haven't in the past, if there ever were to be a well that would be affected, there's a regulation actually that if we would happen to affect a well and it's determined that we affect it, we have to provide a free water supply to that person for a certain predetermined amount of time. I believe it's a three-year period. I think it's a three-year period.
Yeah.
Okay, that was the second one. He mentioned his septic possibly going bad. I do know. I work with DENREC quite a bit. In fact, I worked there for about 7 years, and there's quite a bit of leeway given in that interpretation of the regulation. If you're within 200 foot from typically a main that's easy to tie into, typically a gravity collection line is somewhat easy to tie into, they would probably want you to if your home is within 200 foot. But the regulation itself actually states if there are physical or legal or economic reasons that would prohibit it, certainly they would all be taken into account. So if he would be able to construct a septic system for $5,000 or whatever, and if our connection fee happened to be more, I think he could make that case. They seem pretty flexible with that regulation. I mean, it's their regulation and it's up to them, but usually it's got to be relatively clear cut that you can get tied into it.
Okay. Solid waste.
The solid waste, the biosolids, actually, there would be no land application at all on this site. We would do similar to what we're doing at the Hart's Landing facility. There would be a tank that it would go into.
Turn that thing off.
And one of two things. I mean, there would be a licensed hauler that would come in and receive that. And one of a couple of things. I mean, if the licensed hauler is permitted somewhere else in the county at a site, perhaps he would take it there. Or we could actually dry it and dewater it somewhat and actually take it to a landfill. It's not been fully determined, but one of those two options will be done. There will be no land application on site of the solids. He mentioned the approval of other projects, which I think Dennis sort of hit on earlier. I mean, that's ultimately up to the county, and it's tough to predict, I guess. He mentioned if something were to happen to fail, that's the purpose of the generator, essentially, to provide the backup generation if the power goes out. So it's there to prevent things from failing. There's a lot of redundancy in these types of plants. The pumping stations typically have multiple pumps. In the event one pump goes out, you have backup there. So I won't say there's never, ever a failure, but it's unusual with the backup and the redundancy in the backup generation.
If there is a failure, what happens? I mean, an alarm goes off or something, or
and there's different types of failures. I guess if a pump goes down or if the power goes out and the generator kicks on, we have a computerized system essentially that actually tells which condition just happened. The generator kicked on because the power went out, and it actually calls our operator that's on call, and we're made aware of the situation. If a pump went down, we would dispatch a crew. They would go out, and they would take care of the situation and get it fixed and get it back into operation.
Okay.
I believe that was the...
I think that was the list.
Okay. If not, I'd be glad to answer questions afterwards as well.
Find out. We'll see if he sends up one of his buddies with another question. Okay. We'll see. Okay, who's next? Who else would like to speak? Yes, sir. Step right up.
I'm Richard Roller. I live on Trussum Pond Road, right beside this project that they want to put up. We don't have the problem. The problem is that Old Stage Road, where they have the trailer court and Sandy Ridge, where they're constantly pumping septic tanks out. Is it correct that you people have a pumping station up there at Sandy Ridge? That I don't know, but I see a pump up there, and they have a generator in case it goes out. I'd like to know another thing. Is this property leased, or was it purchased outright by?
I believe the man said it was leased.
In other words, they can go out in 10 years, or they can whatever.
Well, we're not privy to the terms of the lease, sir. But I don't think that anybody's going to invest a lot of money on something where they could have to get out in 10 years.
I know where this tank is going to be because my property is most adjacent to this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the man raised hogs up there. There was a trailer sitting there for many years. He raised goats in that same area, and he couldn't even raise a garden up there, but he tried. He tried to raise watermelon, and it didn't succeed either. I'm feeling, you say that they don't have to hook onto this water line if it comes down along the road?
No, we don't have to.
The water line or the sewer line?
Neither one.
Well, that's in favor of the older people that live there. We got a lot of old people live on this road.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I do in the neighborhood. I take care of old people. This way of food is what I do. I'm a food minister. And my concern is my neighbors. Now, right back of my house, they consider that wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
Because the man gave the property to the state. My brother-in-law bought some of that property and was going to put crops in behind there, like wheat and grain, to feed the wild turkeys. And they told him he couldn't do it because it's considered wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
That's adjacent to this property.
Right.
So I'm worried about my neighbors is what I'm worried about, and myself, because I don't have many more years here. But I don't like to look out and see a big ball in the back of my property staying out. I love the trees better than I love the ball. And I want to, my concern too is like Mike said, I live across the road from him.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an overflow from this septic system, it flows down that stream. That stream goes right down by the American Legion, and it flows into Records Pond, and Records Pond flows into Broad Creek, and Broad Creek in the Nanticoke River.
Let me assure you of one thing, sir. If I thought there was going to be a problem with Records Pond, they'd have a serious problem, because I live on Records Pond.
Okay. I know they have a little problem up there at one trail court. I get around this county, and I know what I'm saying. But the thing of it is, I'm concerned about the sanitation. This problem is not down at our end of the road, it's at the upper end of the road. And some people never got a notice to this hearing.
Well, we're not required to send a notice, just required to put up a sign and put it in the newspaper.
They did put a sign up just below my house. So that's all I'm concerned about at this time, but I do look out after the people. I am also a chaplain.
I appreciate that, sir. Thank you. Appreciate your good work. Who's next? Yes, ma'am. Step right up, and then the gentleman who's been waiting patiently all night. Like the rest of you, I guess you've all been waiting patiently all night, haven't you? That's nothing special with it. Sorry about that. I'll think of something else good for you in a minute. Go ahead.
My name is Catherine Handy. I also live on Trussell Pond Road, and I'd like to go on record as opposing this particular activity. And I do have one question. What happens to the value of property once a treatment company like this comes in?
Well, I'm not sure that anybody can answer that in general, because usually it's specific, but typically where there is water and sewer available, the value of the land goes up, because it's worth more if you've got access to water and sewer. Now, as far as the person who lives right next door, I don't know.
Right next door.
But based on what's been said, it's fairly low impact. And I am going to ask these people when we adjourn if they would be willing to have a short little conversation with anybody who wants to out in the lobby. And I'm going to ask them to arrange a tour for you, or anybody that wants to go. In fact, I'm going to ask them to arrange a tour and maybe have a nice box lunch, you know. but anyway, so that if you want to sit, the best thing to do is to go see what they're talking about. I mean, if it were me, and it's, and like I said, I'm about four miles away from here, so. It's the impact's not going to be that great for me, but I'm not interested in endangering anybody's pond, let alone my own, you know. So I mean, I'd want to know what was going on, and I think it's a good way to find out. So, okay, thank you. All right, sir, your turn.
My name is Leonard Sears, and I reside in Briarwood Manor. One of the pieces of property on the map.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be a tenant. I reside on A1 in that lot.
Mm-hmm.
My major concern is two things.
Okay.
One, I hold a lease with a company, and in that lease, it says that they will provide to me water and sewer.
Mm-hmm.
I have had no formal letters from owners that this was even taking place. I found out about it from Mr. Roller. Mm-hmm. So my question is, when will we be notified that our leases are going to be terminated or rewritten, or what satisfactions are we going to be given to make a difference in our rent? Yes, Briarwood Manor needs water bad. It does. We're under a manganese order by the Office of Drinking Water. Presently, they're getting ready to write another NOB, and that's for pH. Our water hasn't been good for many years in Briarwood Manor. And since 2001, many of our septics in Briarwood Manor have failed. So until some type of compensation is made to us as residents in Briarwood Manor, I think we're going to have a hard time.
Sir, that would be between you and your landlord, the
right
contract. So you would have to sue the landlord for
right
failing to live up to his contract.
And
you,
they've never notified us yet.
It doesn't impact Tidewater as much,
but
as it does
give
your personal
these individuals
contract
the approval to make application.
Well,
Yeah, they've done is said that they would like to be a part of what they're doing. It's not up to them, certainly, as our council said, this is something you want to take up with the landlord, because it certainly is something that's going to affect you and everybody that lives there. But I suspect the landlord's probably well aware that you've got a bad water problem and he's looking for a way to fix it. So I would imagine
that he is, and I'm pretty sure when he sells these water rights, our lot rent is not going to go down.
Well, I don't think your lot rent's going to go down no matter what happens. You know, I just don't think it will. But that's why I think it would be important for your group to start a dialogue with your landlord right now. Don't wait for him to call you. Call him. Talk to him about this, about what these guys are doing.
They run...
I don't blame you. I mean, it's something, you know.
They run other systems in the area. We haven't heard any...
Vice Warner, excuse me.
Any documentation
mm-hmm.
that any of those systems have problems. Presently, Office of Drinking Water, Division of Health and Social Services, do they have any other problems with systems out here that they operate? Will this system that they are going to put on Mr. Truitt's property, will it be secured? Again, two things that are great. You like to climb the tower to the top and write your girlfriend's name on the top of it, right?
Oh, I do it every chance I get.
Well, there's no fences around any of this, and only we just heard a lot of arguments on fences. The other thing is Sandy Ridge is behind us,
mm-hmm.
and they do maintain it. Their property is different than ours because the residents in that development own their own property. So they won't get stuck with a hookup fee, where the residents in Briarwood Manor most likely will end up with a hookup fee. And a water bill and a sewer bill. I know.
Yeah, there's not much we can do about that, sir. I wish we could, but again, that's an issue for your landlord. But you know, if things are, and not if, I know things are as bad as you say they are out there, because I've heard other people talk about it, and I'm familiar with the area. Something's going to happen. It's going to cost somebody something, and like you said, there's a very real concern. It's going to trickle down to you.
Yeah, and
that's
real
why you need to be talking to them now.
Yeah, and a lot of our senior citizens, 53% of this park is senior citizens.
Right.
They just can't afford this in no way.
I think the sooner you get a dialogue going with your landlord, the better off you'll be. That's just my own personal opinion, certainly beyond the scope of what we're doing here tonight, but I know where you're coming from. I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
We thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am. Right up. That's all right. You don't have to hurry. Like I said, 10:15 in Hagerstown. I'm good.
My name is Ruth Bailey, and I also live in Briarwood Manor. My address is 11919 Hickman Drive.
Hmm.
I am 62 years old, so I'm not quite ready to
retire.
Oh,
you're not 62 years old.
I am. And I'm a single person living in Briarwood, okay? What kind of fees will I be charged to hook up to water and sewer?
We have the foggiest idea, because you are a renter, right?
Yes, I rent the property.
That's between you and your landlord, ma'am. We can't tell you a thing about that. We don't know.
So your fees would be...
I don't have any fees.
Excuse me, Tidewater's fees to
uh-huh.
hook up
mm-hmm.
for Briarwood Manor to hook up would be charged to Briarwood Manor. My lease says that they're supposed to be providing me with potable water.
Well, that's, I'm sure, is what will happen is that the property owner
would be responsible for whatever deal they make with Tidewater. Now, how they pass that on to you, or if they pass it on to you, is between you and them. Sounds like you've got something pretty strong in your lease about that, you know, but when your lease gets renewed, those things could change.
This lease automatically turns over every year. I've lived there for 15 years.
Okay, well.
And so according to, if I understand the state law correctly, my lease automatically turns over every year and it does not need to be released. It's, renewed or re-signed.
Right. But I imagine there's some mechanism at some point for the price to go up or down or
something. Yeah, our lot rent goes up every year, whether we have good potable water or not.
Well, band together and start a dialogue with your landlord and get yourself a good lawyer. Now, there's my advice. That's all I can say for you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Phyllis Johnson, and I live two doors from this wonderful thing that's going to go up. And not happy. First place, like the Mr. Roller said, mm-hmm. I seen the sign out in Mr. Truitt's yard, his trailer, mm-hmm. cocked over, and I thought he was putting the roof on the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday I found out of this hearing tonight.
Right.
And of course I'm not speaking to him because he's not one of my favorite people. But anyway, this land that he is foreseeing doing it is nothing but sand.
That's why they want it, ma'am, because
yes.
It's nothing but sand.
Yes,
that's why
it's two doors from me, three doors from me.
Understand.
And behind me, I don't know how far it is. I've lived there 12 years, and I've never walked, but there's the stream
mm-hmm.
runs
yeah.
from the Laurel Truck Stop
mm-hmm.
to the American Legion. And then you get in there, and then it bears off. You go to Trap Pond, and you go to Trussum Pond. Well, it goes behind my house somewhere, but
okay.
Don't ask me where.
Well,
about 5 years ago, I heard these two people talking. They had got in the wrong direction, and they were coming to Trussum Pond in their kayaks.
Mm-hmm.
Two school teachers from Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed to put some things in there. But my main concern is I also have a son that I just bought a trailer in September.
Mm-hmm.
He's working to Johnny Gnostics.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking every dollar he's got to pay his land rent. I bought the trailer for him in September. Mm-hmm. He was paying $320. No, it was $289 when I bought it. And when I went to pay it in October, they'd put it up to $327.
Mm-hmm.
My son lives alone. He can't afford to have a wife. He can't afford to have nothing. It takes every dollar he gets. They're cutting him back on his work to pay his land rent, his electric bill, his telephone bill, and he has to have cable. He doesn't go nowhere. He can't afford to go. And he just lives right there in Briarwood. So I'm not happy with it because I have my own water, my own septic. I own this trailer in Briarwood, and I've got to help my son. He's got to have a home. And my main concern was, why are they starting at Old Stage Road? Why aren't they going up there, Johnny Gnostics, and coming back there? Because there's got to be at least 100 and some houses from Old Stage Road to, and I'm the next to the last house before you get to Road 74. And unfortunately, and then there's going to be 92 houses right next to Briarwood. And, of course, they had across the road from me the 320 that Eddie Dukes tried to get, and Tidewater was going to put it in there with Mr. Truitt then, mm-hmm. but apparently it was thrown out. So I'm not happy with it at all.
Okay. Duly noted. Thank you. All right. Yes, ma'am. Step right up. Did he give you a question to ask?
Mr. Wheatley and Council, I'm Arlene Moore. You've heard me before.
And you're back. Go
thank
ahead.
You. Thank you for hearing all of our oppositions. My son Mike and I are opposed to it.
Okay.
But I do have a couple questions.
All right.
What do you mean by franchise in the pink area on the map?
All right, we'll find out. We'll let them explain that. What else do you have? I like to kind of get all the questions together.
Had they considered any other property? Like there's an open field across from the trailer park.
Mm-hmm.
Down on our end of the road, we can look out and see the deer. We've been watching them all here lately.
Mm-hmm.
We love our end of the road. It's country, and I hesitate to say my age, but I
hate to see. Don't tell us.
I don't like to see too much change, but we've got country down where we are, and we like it, and we are opposed to it because it's right in front of us. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Mr. Schrader, would you have somebody from your team explain what a franchise area is and what the pink areas represent and how they got to be that way?
The areas we referred to in pink that I said have either been franchised to us or the owners of the properties have signed petitions to have it franchised to us. It's just where the owners have elected for us to be their water and or wastewater provider should they ever want a central provider. That gives us the legal rights to do that through the Public Service Commission. If the owner of the property doesn't sign a petition that we would turn into the Public Service Commission that would allow us to serve their property, we cannot serve it. That essentially gives us the legal right franchise area to provide service to a particular area. And it's done on a parcel property by property basis.
Okay.
We can't just take the whole area. It's got to be requested. Was there another?
No, that was it. I think that's what she wanted, lady wanted to know. Thanks. Okay, who's next? Who else would like to speak? Okay, we're going to go with this lady in red, and then we'll go with the gentleman in red with the cell phone. All right, well, you're going to go first, I guess. It's okay.
My name's Tim Lee. I own a piece of property in Briarwood where my parents reside. My question is, I just found out about all this, you know, like everybody else. On their maps, marked in purple, is like a hotbed of, is that going to be an already done deal?
The purple?
Beforehand?
The purple?
Where at Briarwood and Sandy?
Well,
like a businessman needs a good kickstart, you know. Done?
I'll find out.
Okay.
I'll ask.
That's all I have to ask.
That's all you want to know? All right. Okay. All right. Hang on, I'm going to get an answer to this man's question. Purple, it's the hotbeds where all the action is. It's the kickstart. Have you got it in your back pocket or what?
It's not a done deal. Those folks that own the properties have expressed an interest because, as you heard, they're having some issues.
Because they're drowning in it, yeah.
They currently have. There's no signed contract per se. I mean,
let me ask you a question. Who has really contacted you? Has the owner of the property contacted you or have the individual residents contacted you? Who has contacted you?
We've had contact from the consultants that represent the owners, and I can't speak for them, but I assume they've probably been requested to help solve some of the issues.
Okay.
But that's the contact.
Somebody came to you saying that they represent these folks that own these places,
right?
Not the tenants, but the owners.
We're interested.
Okay.
If this gets approved, we'd like to sit down and talk to you in more detail to see if you can really help solve it.
So they've really expressed interest, is what you're saying?
Yes. It's not an option unless it's approved. So they've expressed the interest.
But it could be really okay. That's all we'll find out. Okay. Good. Thank you. All right. Now it's your turn, ma'am.
My name is Coretta Lowe. I live at 11928 Hickman Drive. I live in Briarwood Manor. I've lived there for 12 years. I'm in the unique position, like a lot of these other ladies and gentlemen, that I own my own home, but I'm not a landowner.
Right.
So we're between a brick wall and a hard place. We really are. So one of my questions would be, can they give us a ballpark figure of how much it would be to hook up to this system?
I know that's not your expertise, but I'll ask them. But
that's one of our main concerns.
I don't see how they could, because it's between the problem is that you are dealing with a landlord who owns the land.
Right.
the relationship between what he pays to hook up and what he charges you is something that he has to define. We can't define that.
I understand so this I committee can't, yeah, but perhaps
well,
this
well,
company can.
Well, he can't either because he can't. I mean, I'll ask him, but he has no idea what the landlord's going to charge you.
No, I'm not asking that. What I'm asking is what they would charge for a hookup. Nothing in this life is free.
Well, I'm not sure they know, but I'll find out. I'm
they should have some. I mean, they've done all this nice presentation, and they've factored in everything else. Surely they've factored in how much money they're going to be making on this project.
We'll find out what a typical.
Okay, that.
We'll ask them what a typical hookup is. Not necessarily this one, but just anywhere.
Right.
How's that?
That would be good.
All right.
Where the trailer park services all these different homes, is that considered one hookup, or do they have to? I'm not an expert on any of this.
I'm not either. But I'll see if we can get an answer to that. I think it's probably not just considered one hookup because
I wouldn't think so. So that would factor into your price as well, I would think.
I would imagine. But it certainly stands to reason that it would be a lot easier to hook up a whole bunch of them in a little area.
Right.
Than it would be spread out all over the
road. So. And we would not have a say in it, is what we're trying to say to this committee. We are opposed to it because of the ramifications, not just financially, but also our way of life. If we're charged so much, then it's going to affect everything in our life.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Unless I missed it, I don't remember hearing about any kind of time span, if they were approved, when they would start, and when it would get, say, to our area.
I'll see what I can do to
okay.
A little bit of an answer to that.
Okay. And I would like to say that this is a very small percentage of people who are opposed to this. A lot of us did not know, like it's been said several times, that a lot of us did not know until the last 2 days. So some of the people that are opposed to this were not able to come in. But we are just the tip of an iceberg of people who are really not for this.
Okay.
Project.
Alrighty, thank you. Okay, the question was, what was the question?
Typical.
Oh yeah, typical hookup fees. Any idea? Can you give us some?
Let me preface it with a few, comments on it. There is actually no such thing as a typical hookup fee. There's a lot of variables, and I'll discuss some of those variables. Certainly, we talked about the phasing of the facility, the 100,000 gallons per day
and this needs to be about 50 words or less, okay?
Okay. The more people that sign up where we can reach an economy of scale, you could have a significantly different fee than if only very few wanted to sign up early on. So it's an economy of scale thing is a major part of it. There are different scenarios out there as well. Sandy Ridge, for instance, has an existing collection system because they have a system a central system within their community already. So they will not have to rip up their streets, so to speak. They can connect at one point. They're already tied all together. So they have a good little bit of infrastructure already in place. Someone like Briarwood, it's a little different. My understanding there, they either have individual septics or perhaps two or three homes hooked to a septic, but there's no central collection system throughout the development. So that's another piece of infrastructure that would need to be designed that wouldn't need to be designed within a development like Sandy Ridge.
Okay.
So there's a significant swing, depending on the individual.
Let's go at this another way because you're not anywhere close to leading up to a number, which is what these people want to hear. Okay.
Right.
So let me ask you this then. At what point in time do people know what it's going to cost?
That's a great question.
I know it is. Tell me. Go ahead.
Before the owner's going to enter into a contract with us, he's going to know the numbers. A contract would have the numbers in it. So they'll be on a case-by-case basis. If the further interest is expressed by the owner of Briarwood we're going to have a decent little amount of engineering to determine exactly what he needs within his own streets as far as collection system, pumping station, what he would be responsible for, what he would expect us to essentially finance, and back that into a fee. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to elude the numbers.
I know you're not, and that's why you're giving a good answer. The whole point is that there isn't a number until you do all this. Until you do all this work,
right?
And I understand that. What these folks are concerned about, and it is beyond the scope of this public hearing, but since you're all here, they are tenants. Okay, they essentially do not have an interest in the land, and so they are afraid that all this is going to happen to them. They're not going to know about it. Okay, it's nothing to do with you. It's between them and their landlord. And you know, as I have said, folks, you know what you have to do. You have to talk to your landlord. And the sooner you start that dialogue, better off you're going to be. Okay, you can sit down. All right, who's next? Nah, one trip to a customer.
I just wanted to make a statement. I don't remember him answering one of the
questions. Oh, okay. What question did we miss, ma'am?
What was my question?
That we missed, yeah.
Did
you look at any other sites in the area? That's right. She did ask me that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we actually performed.
Did you look? And time frame.
There was cursory reviews. Certainly performed at other sites. This one is one of the folks had mentioned is Sandy, and I think you had referred to that's an ideal site. When it come down to actually collecting the data,
right.
I mean, the site turned out to be ideal. The time frame is a little bit difficult to predict. I mean, if we're approved. As we go through the county planning process, the earliest that it would be available, there's probably another 10 to 12 months of actual permitting, and then there's a construction phase that would probably take another 10 to 12 months, so the earliest would be 2 years. But again, it's going to really depend on the interest and how many folks want to come into it, you know, initially.
Yeah, so 2 to 4 years you're probably talking.
Yes.
At least 2 years. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
Did you get an answer on, are they
going to
fence, as I asked?
Yeah, the man did ask about a fence.
Are they going to fence their perimeter?
Okay, all right. We know what the question is.
The rapid infiltration basins will definitely be fenced. That's a requirement. We have not got to the final design stages yet, but I'm guessing because this sits back off of the road, most likely it would be fenced and secured when you go into the Harts Landing area.
Right.
I mean, that's... It's secured. It's not fenced, but it is secured.
Okay.
So everything will be secured. It's not been finalized as to whether or not the building itself would be fenced. But.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the tower is internal access? The water tower is internal?
Oh, absolutely, sir. It's internal access. Yes, sir.
I just bring my own ladder. I don't need them to put a ladder up for me. I just get my own.
Believe it or not, we actually have a tower on a school site, and initially the school had requested that we fence it. When they saw the tower, they actually liked it and asked us not to fence it.
If you can climb the tower, you can climb the fence.
Exactly. Okay, anybody else? I think everybody's had a trip, haven't they? Is everybody that wants to speak had a chance to speak?
There's only one left.
You want to make it unanimous.
Everybody spoke.
I think everybody has. Okay.
Everybody has spoken.
Sorry about that.
One next to Leonard.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's right. Did you want to speak, ma'am?
Yeah, she's got one question. We both do.
Are you her interpreter or what?
Yeah, I'm married to her.
Oh, you married to her? He's interpreting.
Well, she can come up and ask it, but you can't. All right.
I'm Gail Sears, and I live in Briarwood, and we would like to know if this company, I've all of a sudden lost it.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter? Okay. I'd like to know if they have submitted a plan to the Office of Drinking Water.
Okay, we'll find out.
And I just don't understand how we're going to communicate with our owner. This has been a problem from the get-go. And absolutely. And
well, I'll tell you what, if you don't send your rent in, I'll bet he'll communicate with you.
Pardon me?
If you don't send him your rent, I'll bet he'll communicate with you.
Oh, indeed he will.
Well, there you go.
But then, you know, that's the end of me right
just
there.
Just when he shows up, you just need to have a check in your hand.
So. Oh, well, he's always gotten it on time.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. The Office of Drinking Water had anything to do with this yet? It's a little bit early,
maybe. It's early in that process. Yeah. I mean, if we ultimately reach a deal where we would serve them, we would have to provide a plan to the Office of Drinking Water,
yeah.
Actually, as well as the State Fire Marshal and others for the water system. We're not near that point at this juncture.
Okay. All right, sir. We thank you. Well, everybody in the room has been up here, so there's no need to ask if there's anybody else left, because there's not. Okay. Does anybody on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to spend the rest of your Thursday evening with us to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. And I do want to tell you that I really appreciate your patience. You're a reasonably well-behaved group, and you know, this is what it's all about. This is your opportunity to speak. So.